Rich on the arms of Glenn.
And John.
Woo. Hey, we were just talking about doing a pre-show show.
Where or a pre-show broadcast.
A pre-show broadcast. Where all we would do is for the first 10 to 15 minutes while we're just sitting here talking shit to each other. Maybe
just
we
let you guys in on the party.
Maybe we should record that.
Yeah.
Because this is pretty awesome sometimes.
Yeah, well, and we could post it randomly throughout the week, too.
Yeah. If you think that's a good idea, shoot us an email, info@trainingaz.com, if you guys want to hear us talk more trash.
It would be rated R.
It would definitely,
definitely not.
Definitely not something for the kids.
Possibly rated NC-17.
Yeah, possibly not something for the faint of heart. So, like,
unless you want your kids to be strong.
If you're one of our moms, people, then don't listen.
My mom's dead. She can't.
John's mom is dead. Mason's grandma's dead.
It's true.
Thank you.
Yeah. See, that's what we're talking about. We still love you, Mason.
All right. We are the official Wilderness Tactical Studio. Make sure you check them out at thewilderness.com. Our gear scholarship is still up in the open. We still have, I think we're in March now or something like that, maybe April, that we're waiting to ship stuff because we've got a lot of great contenders. But shoot us an email, info@trainingaz.com, and we will send you the details on the whole thing. Even if you're not LE Mill, a youth shooting organization, we would still love to send you some gear if you think you can put it to good use. Just send us an email why you think we should send you some Wilderness stuff.
Yeah.
Today's show brought to you by Hex Mag. Glock Hex Mag's getting released very soon.
I'm excited.
Very excited. They're going to have a 30-round. Mm-hmm. They're going to have 17-round.
Mm-hmm.
Available in black and flat dark earth.
Ooh, flat dark earth, though. Mm-hmm.
And the Hex ID system, right?
The Hex ID system.
Yeah, buddy. Which
have different colored followers as well as different colored floor plates. And I will say that I don't use the Hex ID system for my my rifle mags. I know you do because you got the red.
It's purely aesthetically.
It was aesthetic.
Yeah.
their Hex ID system is great for multi-caliber stuff or like, hey, this is my go-to.
For the handguns, though, it's going to be great,
dude,
right?
I'm really excited about it for the handguns.
Because you've got the training guns, the competition guns, the EDC gun, you know.
I've got a mix of different Glocks that I use for various different purposes, from UTM to, you know, EDC to competition to training guns that we loan out. It'd be nice to just be able to easily identify.
Yeah.
Right now, we spray paint the bottoms and all that. But that eventually wears off, so I like that. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be very cool. All right, remember we sell people deployed.
Yeah.
No better reminder of that than the SEAL that was killed in Yemen. It was William Ryan Owens, 36, out of DevGru.
Mm-hmm.
But Yemen is an ally of the United States, and nothing bad would ever happen in the country.
Yeah, we were raiding
in
there killing Al-Qaeda assholes.
I've been to Yemen.
Are you allowed to tell people that?
Yeah, well, I was there when
when it was not a big deal.
I was on deck
within
24 hours of the USS Cole.
Oh, back when you were a Marin.
Back when
and Marin.
Long time ago, bro.
He was part of the
Marines. So about that Navy SEAL thing, my father was telling me that our new president actually took a unscheduled trip to go make sure that that SEAL's body came back.
Correct. He made an unannounced trip to Dover Air Force Base to honor the return of that fallen comrade. That is awesome.
So bad hair or no, that's good on you. It doesn't matter.
Hey, you can't say that about the president.
That's true.
Dude, his first week, I don't remember if it was the second day or first day or whatever, he made a call to a fallen police officer. We might have talked about that on the show before. But
I think we've mentioned it.
He made a call to a fallen officer's police officer's husband.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I don't care what you say about the guy. He's got class.
Whereas our last president blamed the fallen police officers for shit.
Yeah, and he was too busy being on vacation and golfing trips and everything to care about all these people dying overseas.
That guy killed bin Laden.
Yeah, himself. He was there.
Thank goodness for that.
With a golf ball.
He shot him in the face.
With a golf ball.
I got to throw out a reminder here. I've had a couple. No, not for you. I'm gonna switch tracks here for a second.
Hard right.
You can listen to past shows on our website. I don't know if people know that.
TheArmsRoomShow.com, because most of you that are listening live, I'm sure that's how you found us.
All 12 of you.
Yeah, all 12 of you live listeners. We love you all. Thank you very much for tuning in.
Thanks, Mom and Dad and all my sisters and
and my roommate.
Mrs. Stilson. And
thanks, Derek, for listening to my show.
Thanks to our 12 live listeners.
Occasionally, good friend Chad.
We have more than 12 live listeners.
At least 14.
definitely
20.
14.
We're at least at 20.
Possibly 20.
At least 20.
But you can listen to live shows. I get a lot of emails every week about, like, you guys should do a show on X. And I'm like,
we did that 3 weeks ago.
Three freaking weeks ago. So Definitely look at our show list on thearmsroomshow.com. You can go to listen to shows and
listen to past shows, listen
our,
live.
All of our past shows. Yeah. Literally all the way back to them. The beginning of our shows.
Which were some, we did some pretty awesome stuff.
We actually did some pretty good stuff in the beginning. Yeah, you're right. So we also did had a couple of rough shows, but we had some really, really good stuff in the beginning. So make sure that you check that out. There's a lot of cool topics, you know, and if you're looking for a certain topic, you can, I think you view 5 or 6 shows at a time, whatever, it's about a month and a half. Just, you know, control F that shit and freaking find a word that you're looking for. You know, if you're looking for combatives or something like that, boom, control F it, or whatever your iPhone crap does. I don't know, their iPod or whatever.
Sure.
Apple stuff, I don't know.
He's not part of the cult, so.
I'm sure there's a way to search on an Apple. I don't know how it's done.
And be sure to look up the shows where Glenn isn't there.
Yeah.
It's John and I talking.
Definitely. There are a couple.
Those are great.
Tune into those. Those are phenomenal shows.
You sons of bitches. All right. Which is the proper usage of that term, by the way.
Sons of bitches?
Yes.
Yes, because we would both be sons and both of our mothers would be bitches in that context.
My mother's a
except
saint,
for your
sir.
Mom, which is dead, and his grandma, which is dead.
Yeah. Well, that would be...
This isn't about my grandmother anymore, Glenn. This is about my mother. My mother is a saint.
His mother is a
sure
saint.
Sure is. Dad loves her.
Hey, did you get that gross video I tagged you in of those old people that in those interviews? Those old people?
I didn't have the sound on because I was in a really public place, and dude, I was like, this is going to be inappropriate.
Dude, you need to watch it. It's about old people who have sex, and they're talking about having sex, and it just made me think
fantastic
about Mason's parents.
Who naturally, that's sex. The progression of that.
Hi, Bertie. I know you listen to the show. So nice to see you.
Yep.
And Mrs. Miller, I don't know your first name.
She is
Mrs.
a saint.
Bernie.
Mrs. She is Bernie. A saint, Mason.
Mm-hmm.
God, we really are terrible people.
Just oh, man. So my throat is so sore. I can't.
Well, you have a long,
I've
night
get a
last
long
night.
Weekend?
Got to get over the sickness, man.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's what they're calling
that's
it
one
now.
Way to call it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So can we move on to what's in the weekend? What happened this weekend? No?
No.
Well, probably your parents had sex.
I don't know, with 2 brand new twins in the house, I doubt it. But
yeah, even though they're not there.
Oh, twins. They found the time.
Gross.
You've got a big house. I've been to your parents' place. There's plenty of places to hide. You're for gross. A quickie.
Oh.
Let's let that roll around in your mind, Mason.
Oh.
Oh,
holy
shoot.
Crap.
What did you do this weekend, John?
I celebrated my 37th birthday.
Woo! Oh, happy birthday, John.
Thanks.
You're almost 40.
Yeah, I know. Shut up.
Yeah.
But and then that's pretty much it. Bought new kitchen cabinets for a house that I'm going to build in around 2 years. Hey, when awesome. You have the cash and you find the cabinets and you have a great place to store them, you scoop them up. I spent $1,200 all on my kitchen cabinets. No countertops, just the cabinets.
Mm.
And the vanities for both bathrooms for the new house with sinks and hardware, everything done. $1,200 done.
I like it.
So I did that. That's pretty much that's what we did on Saturday was cabinet shopping. And then Sunday we just hung out at home with the wife and the kids and ate cake. And I wore my birthday crown that my 5-year-old made me.
Nice.
It was awesome.
That's cute.
What you got going on, Mason?
I went to the Phoenix Open or Waste Management Open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also known as the People's Open. On Friday, it was pretty cool. You know, it's cool. They do a lot of free stuff for veterans. You get in for free. You just have to have your military ID or equivalent. You also, they have like a tent set up, and this is where I got a little bitter, because they have like a tent set up for veterans, and I shouldn't be bitter about it, because they're giving you stuff, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
But we don't deserve any of this crap anyway, but it's nice that they give it to us. But the line is just old Vietnam veterans.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I don't think there's any such thing as young Vietnam veterans.
Yeah, yep. 4 of them. Different Vietnam, though. You're not allowed to know about that, and it's secret. But the line to get into this tent was going to be like an hour-long wait just to get into this tent, you know?
What's wrong with that?
And it's whatever. You're standing around. You'd think it'd be cool, right? Standing around talking to some old veterans and stuff like that. They totally gave us the cold shoulder because my buddy and I were the only young people in line. Right. None of them engaged us in conversation at all. We were talking
did
to each other.
Did you bother to try and engage
yeah,
them in
absolutely.
Conversation?
Absolutely. And they'd be like, and then not talk to us. Mm. They wouldn't even really look directly at us either, which
well,
I thought was kind of unusual.
You're not entitled to conversation with them.
Yeah.
No, but I'm saying like usually
in their war.
Usually when you meet a bunch of other veterans, you're like, hey, this is cool. And we get along fairly well, or we give each other some shit, you know, but
yeah,
we,
I still think the veteran
to
game is a
other.
Generational thing, man.
Like, yes, it is.
Still a generational thing.
Apparently I have to agree with you on that because they were just not very nice to us.
Aww. Do you need a hug? Did you not feel like a special snowflake?
Yeah, because we're all unique and beautiful snowflakes. So no, I'm just saying, like, we chat with
them. Whatever they did, they didn't assume your gender though, right? They called you just Mason, not Mr. Miller.
It was just, like they that. Mostly just make grunting noises and talked about Da Nang, so I don't really know what that refers to gender-wise, but...
It depends on your flavor.
How dare you assume my geographical location? But otherwise, the event was cool. I talked to some Scottsdale SWAT dudes that are friends of mine that were there. They said it's really boring. My dad usually works the medical tent there and says there's a lot of sprained ankles because these women wear high heels to a grass golf course. Good time. One year, this dude got beamed in the forehead with a friggin' golf ball.
That is legit.
And it was some old guy. My dad treated him, and he said it was pretty legit. This guy had a knot on his head, literally like twice the size of a golf ball. It's awesome. That was cool to see some pictures of that.
The excitement at the Open.
Yep, that's it. That's about as exciting as it gets.
Well, all right. That sounds terrible.
Redwire Gear Mom Goat.
Drink more water. Water is the thing that keeps you alive and keeps you going. I have found lately that I have not been drinking enough water, and it has been affecting my sleep, affecting my mood. I even read an article or two about it. So, yeah, drink more water. Drink less soda. Drink less juice, because everybody's like, oh, juice is healthy. Sure, until you actually read the back label, and yeah, there's like more sugar in the juice than there is in a soda. So
true.
Even natural juice has a lot of sugar in it.
Yeah, so drink more water. Water should be the primary thing you're consuming, as I preach to you while I'm drinking my second energy drink of the day.
Yeah, great, but, John.
You know, whatever. Do as I say, not as I do.
Today's show brought to you by energy.
Because I have a microphone and you don't, so, you know, it happens. Working on some new products, some new projects be coming up soon from us, and yeah, we're probably going to put up a sale code later in honor of my birthday for the week, so pay attention to our social media later today. We'll get a sale code up for you guys to help celebrate my birthday.
The code's going to be, I'm almost 40.
Ugh.
That's going to be the code.
Hashtag loving life.
Why does my dick get smaller as I get older?
It's not true.
And stop working.
Also not true. You can ask Mrs. Redwire about that one.
Gross. I'll pass.
Gross.
That's one coitus I don't want to think about. Now, Mason's parents, on the other hand, that I do want to think about.
That's something Glenn can really get behind, pun intended.
Get behind. Ayo. Oh, hell. Oh, all God. Right. We got a guest in our studio with us, a guest. He's hardly a guest. You've been on the show, what, three times, four times?
Three or four times.
I don't know. More of a friend than a guest. How you doing, Cecil?
Good. Sorry for screwing up.
That's okay.
Immediately.
That's I forgive right. you.
Cecil I apologize Birch. To the millions of people in Arms Room Land.
Sorry. Yes, the millions of people.
Yeah.
So one day maybe.
Sure.
One day the
million. Total maybe a million people
millions
ever.
Millions of people, yeah.
This is no reflection on my normal professionalism.
I noticed you shaved also from yesterday to today.
I don't think.
After dropping Craig off at the airport and getting home last night. I was so dead.
Dude, I went for a freaking 4 mile run, 3.5 mile run with this guy this morning. Let me tell you what. That was I don't mind running too much, but this morning.
You're welcome.
It was rough. I got through it, but it was rough. So Cecil Birch from Immediate Action Combatives in the studio to help us talk today about handgun combatives and how to not get shot with your own gun. And I want to start off talking a little bit about...
Wait, can I do an equivalent of the Redwire Gear moment?
Yes, please do.
Okay, there's a concept called flow of traffic. So if you're driving, especially down Happy Valley, and all the lanes are full, and there's 5 or 6 car lengths between you and the car ahead of you, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Two of them. It's a good thing I was not armed at this particular moment, because we'd had a road rage moment. Okay, all right, there's my rant.
Wow. Flow right. of traffic. Got it.
Flow of traffic.
That would not have ended well for whoever those people were either.
Oh, look at that goofy insurance salesman. What's he going to do?
Oh, God.
Wreck your fucking soul.
I can't hear him, but I can tell he's screaming at the top That's of right. his lungs.
So this weekend, we did an event. We hosted an event, VCAST, which is Vehicle Combatives and what was the rest of the
Shooting table? Tactics.
And Shooting Tactics from our good friend Craig Douglas over at ShivWorks. We host and have been hosting Craig Douglas once a year for the last 4 or 5 years. Craig is one of those he's one of those guys on the very short list of instructors that I tell everybody that will listen, if you have a chance to go to a class with ShivWorks, you go.
Yeah.
All right. You travel out of state, you spend the money. You do whatever you can to train with this guy. It'll change the way you look at things. It will change the way you look at yourself. I love his classes. Once a year, I get an opportunity to set a watermark for myself. Where am I at? How am I doing?
And this was a pretty good example, too. Talking about getting simple things like getting out of a vehicle when a guy is approaching.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, oh, I'm not getting out of this vehicle particularly quickly, and the seatbelt's wrapped around. Something stupid like
and
that.
And the dude's on me.
And he's on me. Yeah. It's such a simple thing, but it wakes you up and says, oh, I need to change a lot of stuff.
So it was really interesting. I got to show you your video, by the way, with Pace. The first Evo we did, where it was just driver, passenger, get out of the car and fight.
Where
there's some good
him and Jules against you and me.
No, that one was. I don't have a video of
Brad
that.
Is my lover.
No. The one where it's just you and Brad versus each other. It was the very first Evo we did.
Oh my God, that sounds extremely interesting. That I want to see that.
A very interesting video. The shooting part isn't the interesting, but the first 5 seconds will help you to remember a very important lesson.
Really?
Yes.
Because man, as soon as I heard go, everything was just like right out the window.
There is a. I got to show you this video. You really like it. I didn't. You know, have any chance to get any videos myself yet. I'm hoping to.
I got a couple of. I got all the final one-on-one gunfighting videos.
Where me and Jules just mountain goat headbutted for five straight freaking minutes.
That
was exhausting, dude. My arms were worn out, and he was too. I could tell. It was exhausting.
Well, it's hard fighting dwarves.
It is, man. So it is hard fighting dwarves.
Are you calling Glenn a dwarf, or is the other guy smaller than Glenn?
Jules is smaller than me, but not by a lot. It kind of was like two dwarves fighting in a car.
He's like a head shorter than Glenn, but he's got like the dwarf compactness.
Yeah.
And everything. So he's like the little.
And the problem is, as soon as we went go, we both got into literally an identical start position.
Inside
of the front seat of a sedan. So it was.
At least it wasn't a compact.
Yeah.
So imagine fighting in the front seat of a Fiat.
The class was all about vehicle tactics and fighting in not vehicle tactics from all this queer faggotry stuff that you see online where people are like assume the dynamic prone and they're like shooting underneath the car and all this. It's not all that kind of stuff where that has a limited basis. So here's the reality: if someone would have tried dynamic side prone or whatever underneath this vehicle this weekend, they'd have got murdered.
They would have got straight up.
There's absolutely not a place for that in what we're talking about, which is practical application vehicle. Now, if I'm running, you know,
practical EP, application of self defense for normal
as
people.
A civilian, right? Or that's good. Or as a law enforcement officer, right? Now, if I am running EP work in a three-vehicle convoy overseas, there might be an opportunity to do something like that. I probably got multiple attackers. Yep. I'm going to have to hit them from multiple angles. We're going to have multiple fields of interlocking fire, and there's going to be all kinds of great military shit that we're going to be doing, right? Yep. But for just one dude with a handgun with 10 rounds, which is all we got, was 10 rounds. Yep. And for one dude and a handgun and 10 rounds, you had a lot of problems to solve in a very relatively short amount of time. And doing things like totally compromising your position like that would have been a terrible idea. Just a terrible, shoot him in the foot concept or whatever.
It sounds real good when you're looking at the cars and planning this out. And then when you're actually doing it, everything goes
force
out the
on
window.
Force makes people's plans go out the windows. Like Mike Tyson used to say, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face, right? So it's just like
when I was shooting it out with Brad right there, I was using cover perfectly. Until that first round went off. And then I'm like, oh, I'm in a gunfight. And I'm standing right there in the open, and so is he. And we're just lighting each other up, being complete idiots.
A lot. These were seasoned students who are multiple graduates of Craig's classes as well as multiple graduates of other people's classes as well as cops, soldiers, Marines. You know, this is not a class. This is not a beginner level class.
No.
This is not a class where this is anyone's first rodeo.
Well, you have to be an ECQC graduate to do this class.
Yes, but I mean, even beyond that, all of these students have a ton of shooting experience, fighting experience.
I don't think there was anybody there who had less than two courses with Craig. Plus
all the other stuff that they've done, which was military experience, law enforcement. We had really federal agents there. I mean, we had all kinds of stuff. This is not a beginner level class, and we still saw a lot of stand and deliver slugfests happen outside of cars where two guys just drew their guns and shot each other to death.
And you forget all the little things, and it's not like we got thrown into doing the live fire right away or the force on force right away. We had essentially, 2 hours Friday night and then 4 or 5 hours Saturday before we ever geared up for that kind of stuff.
Right.
And still, even with all the practice and reps.
So it was a really interesting class because essentially where we started, and this is all going to tie into what we're going to talk about today, which is not getting your gun taken away from you. But it started with, effectively getting out of a vehicle, right? And that's effectively getting your seatbelt off, effectively opening a door. Just there's more to it than what you might think when you're looking at potentially
not getting caught in this triangle
inside the door. Then we moved on to live fire, which was shooting out of the car, shooting out of the passenger side, shooting out of the driver's side, shooting as a driver over the passenger side when you had a third person in the vehicle, shooting as a passenger through the driver's side when you had a third party in the vehicle. We covered all those iterations, covered shooting forward, you know, opening the door and engaging out the door. And then we went into Evo's evolutions, which were getting out of the car, just like we'd been doing all day, and fighting. And that was interesting. It was just two people, one guy in the driver's seat, one guy in the passenger seat, on go. You get your ass out, you shut the door, and you do everything you can to work those angles and that depth on that car and try to get a beat on the other guy. Some people lived, some people didn't.
At least I took Brad down with me.
It was good, man. I was my Evo for that one. I managed to kill my other guy, but not without I did take a round over the top of my left shoulder.
But you use cover better.
I did, but I'm also a lot more used to it than I think the other guy was as well. But that was a good Evo just to learn how to really get away from the vehicle, keeping that long 6 foot. Space.
Because we shot cars to show why you can't just be right there behind
them. We skipped rounds off of hoods and into targets, and you know, we engaged getting out of the vehicle and racing, which was interesting. It was really interesting to do that with a group full of shooters of this level where you had to get out of the vehicle, maintain cover, engage three targets on the other side of the vehicle utilizing cover. So many people either hugged cover, got too far out in the open, or surprisingly, flat out missed their targets.
Missed. The one had out of six shots, missed five times.
Mm.
Just simple stuff like that. Mm. It was amazing.
And it's just, you know, trying to maintain cover, trying to do your thing. It was difficult, you know. Then the second day we did. Oh no! So day one we ended with the rear end deal.
Oh yeah, that's
so
right.
So there was four people involved in this evolution, two people in a sedan, two people in a truck. Two people in a truck are unknown. Two people in a sedan are quote unquote good guys. One of them is armed, one of them is not. Third party can only take commands from the armed party. So the armed party is the focus of the evolution. The evolution begins. You're driving around in circles on our range until at some point in time the sedan slams on the brake and the truck rear ends it. We actually got to rear end each other.
Yep.
At reasonable speeds, we're not being dangerous or stupid.
Slamming stock car racing.
Yeah, but we are. There is a good bump, so you know you've been hit, and then it goes wherever it goes. And there was some really, really interesting things there. You know, there were guys who got out of the vehicle immediately. There were other people who, you know, got the passenger in the driver's seat and had them leave. There are people who created distance. There were people who just straight up got murdered sitting in their car because it was a straight up bump and grab. You know, so there was some interesting scenarios there. Day two. What did we cover day two?
We went straight into fighting.
Straight into
car.
VBJJ, which is vehicle Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is fighting another human in the front and back seat of. We had four different vehicles, including a pickup. And I'll tell you what, you know, I've done various different fighting stuff over the years at various different levels. I have never fought someone that many times in a vehicle. It was exhausting. It was absolutely exhausting. My whole back is bruised. I got scrapes and cuts and everything down my arm just from fighting people in a vehicle. What I really liked about so much of what we learned, though, was that – and Craig was right about this when he said, if you could take anyone, they can have any kind of skill, but if they've never applied it inside a car and you even have just this 4 or 5 hours worth of work that we've done, you're going to wreck somebody. And at first I thought, okay, yeah, that you know, that's probably not true. It is true.
It's completely true.
I was rolling with guys in the vehicle who have way more BJJ experience than I do, and I was still beating them by using the inside of a 3D environment.
Yep.
You know, it was amazing the ability to use steering wheel, stick shifts, headrests, jam someone down and into the floorboard, and then they can't even move. There was amazing, cool stuff that you can do in there. Then we took that to the next level by incorporating knives. And then we took it to the even next level by incorporating guns, munitions guns. So now you're in a vehicle, final Evo is, you're sitting in driver's seat, the other guy's sitting in the passenger seat, you both have a gun, you both have a knife, go. Doors are closed, and the fight is on. And those are always interesting Evos to watch because some of them are over in 30 seconds, some of them take 5 or 6 minutes. Yep. And you know, some of them are very technical. Some guys try to get the gun out too fast, try to get the knife out too fast. Some of them get disarmed.
Though we didn't see that this class nearly as much.
Nearly as much as ECQC. Correct. In ECQC, you see a lot of people get disarmed and get shot with their own gun. Yep. Didn't see that nearly as much in this class.
Most, like you know, like we said, most of them have been through multiple courses with Craig. A bunch of them have trained with me. Mm-hmm. They've been through that kind of stuff, and so you didn't see it. I mean, in ECQC, especially with brand new people, it's you can pretty much count on it. You can pretty much bet, oh, here it comes. Boom. Disarmed.
And then they the next part of that class was the last part of the class was actually shooting cars. We shot through windshields, into windshields, through side glass, all that kind of stuff with various different rounds. Everybody brought their different self-defense rounds. We had, I don't know, maybe 15 different rounds or so.
Yeah, probably.
And this is something I definitely want to talk about a little bit in detail because I think it specifically relates to handgun combatives. We also had – so in addition to that, we also had a trauma surgeon who took the class and has some ballistic gelatin. He brought some ballistic gelatin into which we shot a myriad of different rounds. We shot through glass, cool into the rounds, all the cool guy stuff. We had some 5.56 there. We shot some 12-gauge into this ballistic. All these different things that we shot in. It was really, really interesting to see and to hear his – trauma surgeon experience of, okay, so this is why this is not that big of a wound channel. This is why this is a really serious wound channel. Here's some interesting things that I learned. I've shot into vehicles and around vehicles a lot over the years. Here's some interesting things that I took away from this. And that is that, again, to be reminded, really, that with a vehicle, it is better than thin air. You know, so often we espouse just get the hell away from a vehicle is a bullet magnet, which is true, but maintaining it between you and your opposition can be very beneficial. I mean, with the exception of shooting sideways door to door toward the top of the door,
right,
or shooting sideways through the trunk space, just about everything else will stop a handgun round, you know,
including pretty, you know, heavy duty handgun rounds.
Yep. We were shooting 44 mags. We had heavy penetrating 44 mags, 357 SIGs. There was some pretty interesting stuff out there. I will say I was the least impressed with the Speer Gold Dots.
Yeah, surprisingly.
That is a round that I don't carry currently, but I know a lot of people who do.
I know people who swear by it.
I was incredibly disappointed at its performance to penetrate into vehicles. Incredibly. It fragmented most of the time in the door.
Yep. The HST held together.
The HST did very well.
Did really well. Mine and a couple other guys did well.
Yep. Anybody have Winchester Ranger?
Yes.
Yep.
That do?
Ranger did okay.
It was decent.
It did okay. I would say middle of the pack.
And perfect. That's my perfect round then. Middle of the pack.
Middle of the pack.
Just like me.
Corbon.
Middle of the pack.
The Corbon 110 grain TSX or whatever round it is from Barnes.
Yep.
Barnes bullet, that was incredible. All copper bullet. Through windshields, had almost no deflection. Mm. I shot some of that 90 grain Liberty 9mm ammo at 2,000 feet per second.
Just ball, right?
No, it's jacket hollow point. Not jacket hollow point, just a solid hollow point.
It's like a cookie cutter hollow point.
Yeah. It punched through windshield glass again, very little deviation.
Very little deviation.
Shooting through windshields, we shot 15, 20 rounds to include 44 mags, 357 SIGs, 45, ball, jacket hollow points, all kinds of stuff. The two rounds that performed the best shooting it from the inside of the vehicle to out were the Liberty and the Corbon, the 110 grain and the 90 grain 9mm. Yeah. They were almost point of aim, point of impact. Yeah. Some of the other ones, like the Gold Dot, had so much deflection.
Surprisingly
so. I mean, you're talking aiming, literally we put a dot in the center of this target, like actual center of mass, and you're talking that thing's shooting in the throat. I mean, massive, massive deflection. Other rounds, HSTs.
Those were solid.
They were pretty good.
It was a really consistent.
Yeah, you were shooting like middle – you know, center of mass hitting like high chest, which is good.
Yeah,
which
is good stuff. And we did it. It wasn't just one round. Mm-hmm. We shot a bunch, and it was very consistent.
And then I took 7 or 8 HST rounds, and just put them as fast as I could through the windshield, and there was minimal enough deflection where I started low basically and worked my way back to normal sight picture and was able to keep everything probably in the size of a fist going through the windshield. Yep. So that was really cool. The ballistic gelatin part was really neat. I'll tell you what, the Liberty Ammo, I've seen it do some really interesting stuff. I like the story of Liberty Ammo and how it was founded and all that. The ballistic gelatin, that was some nasty stuff.
Yep. It's hard to disagree when you have a trauma surgeon for the busiest level one trauma center around who does this all the time and teaches other trauma surgeons how to handle wounds based on showing them in ballistic gelatin what it does, who then looks at Liberty and says, "How, you know, can we cuss on this radio show?"
You can say what he said because it's funny.
Yeah. He said, if this patient came across, he's fucked.
Yeah.
That's the medical opinion of a trauma surgeon. So that makes you kind of go,
Yeah.
Maybe I should be carrying this kind of ammo.
Yeah, I think I need to go to the store after this.
So it's like the HST, and I've got some pictures of the ballistic gelatin. It was interesting because, you know, my 124 grain plus P bonded HST, which I've always sworn by for a long, long time, it went into the ballistic gelatin, had decent cavitation, and then literally traveled the length of this 18-inch gelatin and almost popped out the other side. It had a nice, beautiful blossom of a rose petal expansion. It was perfect, right? Then we shot that Liberty, and, I mean, it went in. It penetrated deep enough to where he was like, okay, this is what you want. This is how much.
He's like 14 inches, something like that.
Well, it was just that initial penetration. It was like 3 to 4 inches. Initial and he was like, that's what you're used to, about
3 to 4 inches.
Right?
Yeah.
So he was like, that is good day. If you shave all solid. The way. So if, you know, it was gross. that initial entry where he was like, hey, this is enough depth to get in there. And then it just detonates. But the cool part is it's not like a lot of this other trick ammo that just sends 1,000 fragments anywhere. It sends these fragments off, but then the base of the projectile continues to travel.
In one solid piece.
When you hear a trauma surgeon, when he looks at the round and goes, that's bad. That's really, really bad. It definitely made me think, you know.
Where can the folks listening buy this ammunition?
Liberty Ammunition, just about anywhere.
Sweet.
We got some shipped to us from Liberty to go do some hog hunting and some coyote hunting and stuff with. And I'll say I've been using it for hunting purposes. The 55 grain stuff is gnarly. It's absolutely gnarly.
It's hard to just go, yeah, I just keep running my 147 plus P HST.
Yeah.
When right there in the same ballistic block, you see them lined up
next to each other,
and you go, that was good.
Yeah.
It was definitely.
Yeah. HST. Nothing wrong with the HST. Nothing,
but then you see it next to it and go, oh, that's kind of a little bit better.
That is insane. So, yeah, that was pretty wicked. So that was really, that was an interesting thing. So here's the point of all this is that, number one, you got to get out and you got to take some ShivWorks classes. They're really one of the guys I just hands down recommend all the time. But you also have to start looking at vehicles differently, and you have to start looking at weapon retention differently, which is kind of really what we want to talk about today, which is handgun combatives and how not to get shot with your own gun. So kind of give me your take on that, Cecil.
It's funny because, you know, traditionally it's always the, you know, move the gun away from the people and put your hand on it, and that'll keep the gun in there. And just from a pure fighting perspective, it's just wrong in all points. There's nothing valid in any of that stuff that's been promulgated for 20, 30, 40 years. You go back, I've got all these cool guy gun books from the 70s and the 80s where they're like, oh, this is the latest, this is how you do it. And I just look at it and go, that's wrong. You are going to be on the ground. You're going to get knocked out. The guy is going to get your gun. At the very least, the gun's not coming out for either of you while he beats you to death. There's just certain simple things you need to do to not let that happen rather than get focused on, oh, I'm going to retain the gun. It's not separate from everything else.
Well, more importantly, I think it's not about strength.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a huge eye-opener, I think, for a lot of people when they start getting into weapon retention is they think, I am going to outstrong this person and I'm going to keep my gun either in my hand or in my holster simply from a strength perspective.
Good luck.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. It's position and leverage. It's a simple thing. You have, we can do it. We've seen it with, you know, big, strong guys picking people up, but the gun's not coming out. Mm.
Picking them up by the gun by in the gun, holster.
In the holster.
When they've got a good, solid clinch on it, and it's not happening.
It's not happening. And anybody can do it. It takes, I've seen it now. I've taught it now a ton of times to few hundred different people. Mm. It works within minutes. It's no complex thing. I gotta learn this and spend 10 years practicing it. 5-10 minutes learning, 5-10 minutes practicing. It's easy. You just have to do it.
Now, when we're talking about weapon retention, we, you know, people think automatically go to some kind of high speed move or maneuver, which is, okay, I'm gonna keep the gun up in the high compressed. That's part of weapon retention, right? I'm gonna keep the gun clinched in the holster, that's weapon retention. The type of holster I have is weapon retention. Concealment is a type of weapon retention. Body positioning is a type of weapon retention. All, you know, two hands on the weapon is a type of weapon retention. These are all weapon retention techniques that we can utilize to make sure our gun doesn't get taken away from us, which I think is probably a legitimate fear of just about anybody out sure. there who's going to get into a close quarters gunfight is to get their gun taken sure. away from them and get shot with
sure,
it.
Sure, absolutely.
Now, that being said, I think where when we say weapon retention, people don't think is appropriate timing for the gun.
Absolutely.
And I would say the majority of times in a training evolution, which I see a whole lot more of than I see real world situations, though there's plenty of that stuff out there to see anytime you want. There's plenty of videos to watch people getting their guns taken away from them. A lot of LE out there get their guns taken away from them. But I don't mean a lot as in a lot of the LE, but in the fights where guns come out, it happens in an entangled gunfight kind of situation. with civilians, it happens a lot. And that's an inappropriate timing. So I think another part of weapon retention that most people are not thinking about is when is the appropriate time to bring my gun into this fight. And as we saw this weekend in a vehicle, you better have 100% control before your gun comes out.
Before the gun comes out.
Or you are not, you may not lose it, but now you've just put a thing in your hand that you can't let go of, right? Short of throwing it out the window or whatever, you can't let go of this thing and you've tied up a hand now. So now maintaining their limb control or maintaining better body position for you just got reduced. You're now a three-legged stool, so to speak.
Yep. It was interesting this weekend. So we're working the car fighting earlier in the day, working some reps, and one of the guys who's not one of the high speed guys, he's done ECQC at least once or twice.
Right.
I think he's trained with you on a couple shooting classes. You know, no, you don't look at him and go, "Oh, this guy's a physical fighting monster" or anything. He's an older guy. He was having trouble because he in his training practice. Mm. Because he was bringing the gun into play. And he asked me, "So when do I get the gun out?" And I basically said, "When you have the superior positional control." And we kind of walked through it, and I kind of showed him what I meant and demoed it, and he practiced it. So then it comes his time to do his Evo, and he lit that dude up. He had perfect control. And that was one of those 30, 40-second fights. He got that position, completely locked the guy up, gets the gun out, and then because he's a nice guy, he wasn't actually pulling the trigger on the Sims gun and was
bang, thinking, bang, question
bang,
mark?
Bang, bang. Like, can I shoot? And everyone's going, pull the trigger. And he lit him up because he took that to heart. It was have that positional control, have that control over the guy, and you can do what you want. You have plenty of time. You don't have that. This is what I always say. If you don't have control over the other guy, that gun that you bring into the fight, it's owned equally by both guys. And the guy who gets ownership, permanent ownership, is the guy who gets the control of the position. And it might be you or it might be the other guy. So, you know, I think it's probably a better idea to pay attention to position first and not go for that magic talisman, which is what everybody wants to do.
Well, and I think a lot of that comes too from, I had an interesting training last week. I told you about it, and I'll share I'll share it on the air. I had an interesting training last week where I was training with a few individuals who who I've trained with quite a bit doing shooting stuff, right? Just shooting stuff. And we've really kind of started to transition now into more fighting with the handgun type of stuff. And as we've made this transition, they have really become interested in this whole weapon retention and all that kind of stuff. And I was talking with them about the idea that, you know, the handgun is not the solution for all problems, right? The handgun doesn't make you more powerful, and that when the handgun comes into play, it becomes a source of power for the person wielding it, right? Whether it's the person exactly. wielding it as a bad guy or someone wielding it as a good guy, if that gun, now someone latches onto that gun, where does everyone's attention go? The gun.
The gun.
Right? So now if you're rolling with somebody in real life, because I see it in training, if you're rolling with someone in real life who can both focus on the gun and better position, they're about to wreck your world. Because if to them the gun is not a source of power, right? If to them the gun is just a tool, and that's the way they look at it,
yep.
and their better position on you is the ultimate goal, then they're going to wreck you if your understanding is that the gun is a source of power.
I need to get to this above everything else. Mm-hmm.
Or it's out, and now, oh, now I can't get shot with my own gun, or I need to get this thing into play. They'll float the gun. They'll bring the gun away from their body. They'll give up control. They'll give up control of their gun just because they're trying to get the gun into position as opposed to getting themselves into position.
Exactly.
Obviously, you see that a lot with knife fighting.
Yep.
You know, when we start incorporating knives into all this work, having a better body position is always better.
It's also true in a pure empty hand perspective as well. You get guys who just start swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
And maybe they get the knockout, maybe they don't. But the other guy who latches on, puts himself in the right place, protects himself, and right. then starts swinging, he's going to probably win the fight.
Right. Now, what do you think, for the average person out there, right, because we always like to give our listeners some, you know, something to work on. For the average listener out there, what can people start looking to work on when we're talking about these kinds of topics?
I think the first thing is always to think what's the most important step into weapons retention is to be able to stay in the fight, not necessarily get to the end, but stay in the fight. So you got to stay conscious. You got to stay mobile. So protect your CPU. Mm-hmm. Don't get knocked out. Don't get put into a position where you can't fight. Whether that's standing or on the ground, it's kind of irrelevant because you can do both. But you've got to be able to move and change your position and get to a good position. So you stay conscious, stay mobile, number one. Don't worry about all the other stuff. Keep your hips square and keep your belt line below the other person's. If you can do those things, you are so far ahead of the curve. And those are the things that generally are not even taught by most martial art fighting people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just incorporate those things into before you worry about, I got to get the gun. I got to get those, you know, magic bullets flying through the air. You know, as a friend of mine says, what is he? As long as there's lead in the air, there's hope in the heart.
Right.
You know, that's not the way to think about it.
Sure.
That should be the last thing. If you get those parts ingrained, you're way ahead. And then everything else is going to be easy. Like if I have a guy who comes, trains with me, and he gets those parts, then we're just working detail. That's the easy part.
Well, I think, too, that, again, it has to do with how you look at the gun. You know, I look at a gun, especially a handgun, not as a way to kill bad guys, but as a way to wear somebody down, right? That's what I look at it as. Is it's a way for me to wear somebody down, where if they're physically superior to me in the sense that they're going to kill me if I don't physically stop them, or they are numerically superior towards me, or they are presenting lethal force, I need to wear them down. Wear them down so I can get better position. Wear them down so I can escape. Wear them down to get to a different weapon. It might be my vehicle, right? It's not like, oh, I use my handgun to fight to my rifle. Like, it's not that kind of stuff. It's I use my handgun to fight to my vehicle, or to fight to cover, or to fight to another armed person who might be able to help me or whatever, right? That's how I look at that. So I look at the gun as literally as a tool to wear someone down. I know that there's a lot of people, including these people I was dealing with last week, who really looked at the gun as a source of power. To them, it was like, well, I am smaller, weaker, slower, whatever, than the average attacker, so I need a gun to equalize it. You know, the old saying of, you know, God created all men, but Samuel Colt created them equal, right? I don't think that's true. It's a great marketing line, and, exactly. And it sold a shitload of Colts. That's
exactly right.
No doubt about that, but that is not true.
Well,
guns do not equalize people.
It's true in a theoretical sense.
Sure.
If you do everything right.
Sure. If you have two people of identical skill set and one of them has a gun.
And the other doesn't.
And the other one doesn't, it's probably not going to go very well.
Right. But the problem, like you said, with a marketing, like most marketing taglines, it gets changed.
Bastardized.
It gets warped, bastardized. And people start thinking, well, that's the answer. That's it. Oh, if I drive this cool car, then I'll pick up hot chicks. So don't do that, Mason. Don't fall for that. Just so you know.
He didn't. Have you not seen what he kid drives?
No. I'm assuming he drives cool cars because he's a cool dude.
I have one cool car.
But he doesn't actually work. So,
but that's the thing. You know, you can, you know, people want to believe that, right? They want the easy answer that the gun does make them equal. And that's why it becomes the magic talisman that they've got to get out there. Instead of, like you said, I'm going to just wear him down. It might take one round. It might take the whole magazine. Mm-hmm. It might take 3 seconds. It might take an hour. But I'm just going to have to keep working at it.
And I may not get – that's another issue too, is I may not get more than a couple of rounds here, right? So I need to put them into a location. Hits are not just hits. Right? I need to put them into a location that increases my ability to decrease the other person's capacity, yeah, right, to wear them out. I'm going to give them 2 shots, 3 shots, whatever I can get out before we clinch, before I move, before they find cover, before I do, before I run away, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Because I do want this person to either expire or be detained if I'm, as a law-abiding citizen, if I'm pulling a weapon on them in order to defend myself, then that means whatever they're doing is illegal and bad.
Correct.
And so I need them to be either no longer breathing or detained by law enforcement, which means I need to wear them down to the point that one of those two things can be accomplished. You know, I mean, that's kind of handguns typically don't kill people, right? But prolonged exposure to them does.
80%?
80% of handgun, people that are shot by handguns survive. Only 20% die. So I'm going to chime in a little bit here.
Yeah,
since
please
you guys
do.
Kind of
quiet.
So kind of to answer.
Surprisingly so.
Yeah, it's kind of to answer the question that you asked Cecil from his perspective about what can people start to work on. And my opinion is step one, and we talked about this last week, is fitness. I don't care what your skills are. If you aren't able to fight somebody for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, like, you know, I did ECQC a few years ago, and just the parts of it that I was able to do, dude, 2 minutes full-on grappling with a guy to keep my gun, oh my God, I was exhausted. Mm. And I'm not particularly out of shape.
Now cram that in the front seat of a sedan.
Yeah, now cram that in the front seat of a car.
With a fat fist helmet that doesn't let you breathe in the first place.
You know, fitness is going to be, in my opinion, is going to be your first step to any of this, anything involved with this entire lifestyle if you listen to this show. The second thing is find good quality training, because and you were saying that somebody was asking about how to incorporate that into their personal practice. Well, you have to have a good training partner to give you that force, to give you that resistance, to give you that
pressure. No, my training's up to date. So
yeah, exactly. So my opinion, work on some fitness and then find some good quality training. You know, if you can make a trip, host Cecil, host Craig, you know, take a trip to take one of their classes. Hell, host us. We'll teach you some stuff. We've got a couple of programs that kind of
you
fall
guys,
in line.
You guys
with
do
this.
Exactly the same way. I mean, there's the same mentality with the other people in the class.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's my 2 cents for this show.
That was a good one. Well said, John.
So now what do you think about the about weapon retention, as far as, you know, we've talked about, okay, you got to have an appropriate timing, how you view the gun needs to change, you know, how you look at when it should be incorporated in the fight needs to change. And then we talked a little bit about the physical rep, you know, stuff that you think getting, dropping below their line of gravity.
Outline below.
Square up your hips.
stay conscious, stay mobile.
And stay conscious, stay mobile, you know. And I would maybe add a fourth one that would say always be seeking to improve your position.
Yeah, right? I would agree. Yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, like I'm a huge fan of crossing the T. I love getting to someone's side, especially as somebody who is – I am not a huge guy. And to be able to get to someone's side like that, I can do a lot, man. I can do a lot if I can get there. To square up with somebody who's a big, solid, you know, wall, that's very tough, very tough. But to get to someone's side, to eventually move to their back or whatever, there's a lot I can do from there. Right. So that would be the one thing I would add is to say always be seeking to improve your position. Same thing with any kind of fighting, right? Always be seeking to improve your position.
Exactly.
But if you can level change below where their hips are, if you can keep squared up to them and you can stay mobile, stay conscious, and always be seeking to improve position, that alone is good weapon retention. Yep. Now, as far as the physical skills, because there's a lot of right ways to do it. There's also a lot of wrong ways to do it.
More wrong ways to do it.
So it's like when we talk to people about like shoot house and clearing rooms and stuff, it's like, look, there's a lot of right ways to do it. There are more wrong ways to do it. So there is so much in this industry bullcrap that gets taught to people and pushed out there.
How dare you? Blasphemy. Shocking. Blasphemy.
Shocker, I know. But how...
Thank you, YouTube Shooting University, for all that bad info. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
All of you that have your bachelor's degree from there, stop.
Yeah.
Please, God, stop.
Consider that a defunct university. You need to go get your degree somewhere else. YouTube Shooting University is not a good place to get your degree. So what are some physical skills as far as weapon retention? Now, we talked about posture and position, but what are the physical skills you think that are really bad ideas out there? What is some stuff that you see? Because, you know, you've been in this world since Mason wasn't even alive. All right.
I know. We've already discussed that in the past.
literally training as long as I have been alive.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Cecil is a very seasoned veteran of fighting and traveling and teaching and all this whole world. This is nothing that's new to him. One of the things I always love about the people that I choose to train with, like Cecil did not invent his own system of fighting in order to market some bullcrap. He just took what was good, he added his flair to it, and he said, now I'm going to teach you this with my flair to it, right? That's what immediate action combatives is. Yep. It's BJJ and boxing and physical fitness.
Yep.
And these are the things with some flair based on experience and training and all that kind of stuff. So because you've seen so much crap out there, what are some things that you see that when it comes to weapon retention is just stupid?
Turning the hips, blading. That probably more than anything else, you know, makes my, you know, sphincter clench really tight. And I just go, this is awful. Because I know, you know, we don't have to get into the whether it's a good idea to go to the ground or not. But all the people who say, never go to the ground in a fight, they always blade their hips. Well,
you're going down,
that's
bro.
That's how you're going you're down. That's how,
show's over.
You know, you don't want to go to the ground. Well, Jesus. That's how you go to the ground. And so you're trying to say, I'm going to retain my gun. Well, it's a little bit easier to retain your gun if you're standing up and on your feet than it is on the ground, especially when you got dumped there by another guy who wanted to take you down and you didn't want to go. So that square hip thing, it's just, you know, I think all my students, all the people who train with me sometimes get tired of it, me saying this stuff over and over and over again, but it's so important. Don't blade. And the other one that really gets me is putting one hand on the gun.
In the holster, you mean?
Yeah, when it's in the holster. One hand on the gun and you got your other hand out, extended on the guy. Hey, stay back there, man. Well, so you've removed half your protection to stay conscious, and you've given him something to hold on to with your other hand.
To prevent your mobility.
Yeah. Awesome. Mm. Awesome idea on both parts. You know, those are the things. And those, unfortunately, are what are usually taught as the go-to moves. I mean, police academies around the country, that's their go-to. Around the world, their entire systems about weapons retention, that starts from that bladed interview position. So that's probably the worst.
I call that hiding the gun.
Yeah.
You know, people are trying to turn
Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Yeah, Paul Bart Mall Cop.
Just pull up to him and blade away.
Because it's like when I'm, you know, when I've got the gun and I'm hiding the gun, I'm trying to, as if like, oh, it was here, but now it's gone. Not,
you don't know.
Right? Ooh, it's very mystical. And you can't reach it. Ha, ha, ha. It's like, yeah, I can't reach that gun, but there's other stuff I can reach. And I'm not worried about that gun on the other side because you can't use it efficiently. You know?
Especially against the guys who are trying to grab the gun.
Yeah.
They're probably used to hitting you with socket wrenches and other implements.
Right.
You know, they're used to going, hey, you can't get to the gun if you're on the floor bleeding unconscious.
Right.
True.
Yeah, you give someone a good brachial shot with a socket wrench. It doesn't matter where they're hiding the gun. Yep. So that is a main issue I see, and we see it a lot in our combatives classes that we do teach, where when we start incorporating weapons, that's the first thing people do. As soon as someone approaches them, they try to hide that gun.
I'd hide it.
Well, dude, that's like ingrained into the culture. Like it is. Overall, movies, everybody. That's like step one that you're, that's what everybody's been taught their entire life. And that's all they've ever seen is, oh, if you blade away, they won't be able to reach the gun.
It's a magical position of strength.
Yeah. Except it's not.
It's not. Well, that's the problem, because nobody does force on force.
Yeah.
No, you do that. Hey, here's the thing against a guy who's going, hey, give me your gun. Okay, great. It works. Awesome. Mm. Instead of like, dude, I'll give you $20 if you can get this gun away from me. Okay, ready? Let's go.
Yeah.
You'll learn really quick, because your buddy really wants a free dinner at Longhorn.
$20,
man. Right.
$20 is $20.
$20 is $20.
There's a bunch of Hex Mags.
Mason's done a lot.
Done worse things for $20 than try and take a gun away.
And a Klondike bar once.
Listen, my respect for you is way up here. Don't let it come.
Yeah.
Up there. Don't let
yeah,
it come
but down. What would you do for a Klondike bar? Never ask Mason that question.
I have enough sense to know that if Cecil came up to me and was like, hey, I'll give you $20 to try and take my gun away. No. Yeah. Sorry.
Not worth $20 is $20.
Not worth $20.
No, right? Nope, I'll give it a shot. It. Why not?
$40, $60 maybe, but $20 not worth it.
So we know you're a whore.
Plus hospital costs, maybe.
The price.
Yeah, there you go.
So when it comes to handgun combatives, what do you think is just the dumbest stuff that you see out there?
Man, that? What else?
That's a loaded question.
But while you think about that, I'll share mine. The number one thing I think that I see that it just annoys me to no end is weapon disarms.
Yeah.
That's got to be the thing that just perturbs me the most is everyone's true. Trying to teach a weapon disarm.
That's true.
But Jackie Chan in Rush Hour just takes the gun away from
you're gonna do this, then you're gonna have their gun. You're gonna do this, then you're gonna take their gun. You're gonna pin their gun or do all this.
You're gonna spin around underneath their arm when you come up with their gun onto the side of them.
Yeah, that's the stuff I'm talking about. I'm not talking about taking their gun out and using them against them, right? Like there's great moves where I can take the gun, spin it in someone's hand, step in with my other foot, and then start striking the hell out of them with their own gun. That's a great technique, right? There's the ability for me to pin the gun into their chest. Yep. And if I'm super savvy, I'll slip a finger into that trigger guard and go ahead and discharge a round into their chest with their own gun while it's still in their hand, right? I don't have to worry about that. But this idea of this grab the gun and tweak and twist and That's the thing that it's too complicated. It doesn't work. It works against a compliant training partner on a YouTube video. Right. It does not work against someone who actually
doesn't
want you to take
because
it
there is no dominant positional control of the other guy while you're doing your cool move. Mm. Because all that stuff comes from a non-entangled fighting system. Mm. All these other fighting systems that are used to dancing around on the outside, they don't understand that. So they think, oh, this will work because they've never tested it. Well, find out.
So now what do you think the number one thing that you just hate seeing out there, especially on the interwebs, is about handgun combatives?
Other than
all the speed rocking shit, which bothers the hell out of me.
See, that's
shooting from the hip?
That's probably it. Mostly because, again, it's the same thing. And it's why the speed rock was created in the first place. It sounds really good on a square flat range against a guy who's standing right there with no arms or, you know, and there's no movement. And it's still, I thought we drove a stake through the heart of that a few years ago, but apparently, like Dracula, somebody pulled a stake out and's letting it out there. And there's these Instagram people doing it again and thinking it's a viable, oh, well, no, but it's so fast. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
You can't miss fast enough.
You know, this whole thing.
Even if they're getting hits, your contact distance is too close. You're trading position to get hits.
Right.
And whatever you think you just had, you drew this magical He-Man, I have the power freaking sword, and you pull out your freaking He-Man sword and you start shooting somebody. You get one round in their gut. They grab the gun, push it out of the fight. What have you got left now?
Right.
Do you have the capability? You have no position. You have no dominant capability. You have nothing.
And you're just going to get. And you talk to any trauma surgeon, you talk to any police investigator who looks at, you know, assaults and crimes, they'll see, you know, they'll see guys shot 5-6 times who walk to the emergency room and are capable of doing stuff. It's not like
handguns wear people out. They do kill people from time to time,
but not as often as you'd want them to. And they're still in the fight. And the last thing you want to be is now you've really pissed them off. Maybe you jumped the gun, you know, and you pulled the gun out and you were afraid, and that other guy was just going to give you a, what do you call it, educational beatdown.
Yes.
Now you've just put a round or two into his guts, and he's like, now he's going to kill you.
Well, now this was dead. Just going to be a rape, but now it's murder.
Yeah. Now it's going to be, what's raping after the body's dead?
Necrophilia.
Yeah. It's not a rape, it's necrophilia.
There you go.
Ooh,
that's a slow Tuesday.
Quickly.
See, I had to search for that. Mason just jumped into it. He knew right away where it was going.
It's like an encyclopedia of gross sex things in my head. Stuff.
Yeah, this is the guy to talk to.
But that's probably my number one. Because then when you try to engage with those people from a logical perspective, that this is why you're wrong. Oh, no. See, look. And then just it goes back to that speed.
And I want to do it like anyone. I would challenge anybody. I mean, anybody who thinks that that's an effective thing to go out, get yourself some airsoft, which is low cost. If you have the means to get Sims or UTM, that's even better. And try that. But instead of using a rubber dummy or a plastic target or whatever.
I'll get my gun and I'll do it.
Do it against somebody that doesn't want to get shot. Because in a real gunfight, everybody's moving and no one wants to get shot. And so in that situation, try it there.
Yep.
And if it still works, I will officially retract my statement. You know,
film it, put it up. Yeah.
But not just once. It's got to work
multiple
100 times, exactly. Right? It can't just work one time against somebody. But, you know, do it up against someone even with minimal training, who just has a minimal idea or concept of how a fight goes.
Yep.
And I guarantee you it's not going to go like you think it's going to go.
You know, it'll be a Hail Mary pass. Yeah. Once in 3,000 times that Hail Mary pass works and you, we won in the last couple seconds. 98% of the time, ball's dropped, game over, you guys lose, which is fine for football. Not so good when it's your life on the line.
Right.
I'm not staking my life on a Hail Mary.
Right. All right. Well, as always, we don't have enough time to sit here and talk with Cecil. We need 2-hour shows when we freaking roll with Cecil, that's for sure. But thanks for coming to the show, Cecil.
You appreciate it, man. Sorry I'm late, but
You were really on time, actually, for the time you actually had to
come that's
on
good.
The
show.
So. Gun's always late anyway, Cecil, so it's really not that bad.
Mason's always late getting the show started, so.
Yeah, Mason.
It's always my fault.
It's always it is.
Fault. It is, usually.
You're the producer. We're the talent.
It's great. I always love
or lack thereof.
Either you way. You can bring us out to train with you. Remember, keep that in mind if you want to know more about hosting us or Cecil. Email us info@trainingaz.com. Cecil travels all over the country, even the world, to teach with immediate action combatives and to teach seminars on what he's talking about. Cecil and I teach a class together, our close contact handgun class.
April 9th, 10th, April 10th, 11th.
Email us at info@trainingaz.com.
April 14th, 15th. And we've got some other stuff coming out, entangled fighting and stuff like that. So definitely look out for that. Those are great programs and awesome stuff. Remember to follow us on all the great social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, as the Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear, and Immediate Action Combatives.
Yeah.
Immediate Action Combatives also on all those things, and a YouTube channel. Cecil puts out some very informative videos.
I try.
Yeah, so it's good stuff. Check that out. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Keep that in mind. Look at the other shows that the network has on. And again, we're coming to you live from the Wilderness Tactical Studio.
Go check Wilderness.
TheWilderness.com.
Thank you, man.
Next week, we are going to be talking about gear priorities for a get-home bag or a 72-hour kit.
Ooh.
Nice.
Something we've talked about it before, but we've never, I don't think.
You know, we should do a show on that.
We should. We've never broken it down into a piece-by-piece, this is what you should put in your kit. We often talk about them. We talk about kind of roughly ideas.
We did one of those like super early.
I think it was one of the first ones we did.
It was like one of the first four or five shows we did. But we did one because I brought a kid in. Brian, I think, brought a kid in, and you brought two kids in.
So we're gonna look at that next week. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.